Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you, as usual. And surprise, surprise, there's once again another unilateral change in Obamacare, but this time it's the good martini. This is the Fox News version of the story. The Obama administration, in an 11th-hour change, announced significant exemptions for people who recently lost their insurance coverage and are struggling to get a new plan. Kathleen Sebelius confirmed the changes, which include letting those individuals skirt the law's individual mandate. She said she would allow people who got cancellations and could not find affordable new coverage to qualify for a hardship exemption in order to avoid a penalty next year for not having insurance. She further announced that those individuals will be able to purchase bare-bones plans, catastrophic plans, basically, that until now were available only for people under 30. Naturally, the insurance industry is throwing their hands up in the air here because all these changes keep getting thrown at them at the last minute when they were trying to obey this law. But, Jim, it looks like at least a few people will be off the hook here, and hopefully this is the slippery slope to everybody being off the hook.
I have three reasons why this is the good martini today, even though it represents another last-minute change and shows the arbitrariness of the law in which anything can change at any given moment. Raising the question when Obama supporters love to keep emphasizing, it's the law. Laws traditionally remain the way they are. It's the law, except it could change any given minute. I guess is the asterisk we didn't see on that statement. It's kind of like if you like your plan, you can keep it. One, the people who they're giving this exemption to really do are in dire straits, that they've had their plan canceled and they're looking online, and if the site's working, they don't like what they're seeing and they can't afford, you know. It's very interesting they're saying this qualifies as genuine hardship because it's a genuine hardship created by the law, but these folks really do need, you know, the delay of 1 year. If you read between the lines, it certainly looks like this was forced upon them, or at least strongly urged to them by the likes of Mark Warner and a group of other Democrats in the Senate who are very vulnerable on this. Mark Warner has not attracted really top-tier challengers. So if a guy who looks like he was doing okay is feeling heat over this, it's generally a sign that the polling that they're seeing in their home states and districts is every bit as bad as we would expect it to be. And then kind of the third aspect is, Greg, you realize the administration's position that if you have lost your health insurance, you don't need to buy health insurance in the next year. But if you don't have health insurance, you must buy health insurance in the individual mandate.
Does this mean Pajama Boy doesn't have to have the conversation now?
Ramesh Panuru and a bunch of other smart folks are saying, look, this is really kind of an unsustainable position. Like either there's an individual mandate or there isn't. And the idea of, well, it's there. By the way, remember, this is a tax, right?
Sure.
They emphasize, you know, this is just another tax, but apparently the Department of Health and Human Services can exempt you from a tax at whim. All the pundits said, look, it kind of feels silly to ask these sorts of things at this point, but is this legal? Nowhere in the law, nowhere in the Constitution does it say the government can exempt people from taxes just because they feel like it, or because of some sort of hard, you know, there's prosecutorial discretion and things like that. But the idea of the Secretary of Health and Human Services getting to say, okay, taxes waived for people under these circumstances, not going to sit well with the Supremes, I suspect. And then kind of this third thing that, like, a lot of people will say, wait a minute, why are those people getting an exemption and not us? And I guess, you know, Ezra Klein characterizes the first crack in the individual mandate. This morning, Chuck Todd is saying he kind of doubts anybody's actually going to pay the fine. It'll be on the books but won't be enforced, another great circumstance for a constitutional government. But he thinks this is increasingly becoming absolutely untenable as the days stretch, as we get closer and closer to 2014. This is actually a very big, significant change for Obamacare, and it certainly suggests that this is, you know, there are probably more last-minute changes to come. This does not work the way they envision. All of their optimistic, happy talk in the last couple of days is obviously nonsense. I think the odds of Obamacare muddling through until the public gets used to it is shrinking by the day.
Another big win here is that the administration is essentially admitting that people are paying a lot more for health insurance because of the mandates that exist within the plan, because why else would you not be able to find affordable new coverage if you got your previous coverage canceled? Yeah. Curious question. Interestingly, on Fox last night, Ovik Roy, one of the great policy analysts on this, said this isn't really going to help a lot of people offering them the catastrophic plans either, because they got those same requirements that every other health care plan has, including single guys needing maternity coverage and all sorts of other things like that. So it's not the panacea that a lot of people think it's going to be here. All right, on to martini number two now, but staying with Obamacare, and we turn now to the security issues on healthcare.gov. This is from CBS, Cheryl Atkison. A top healthcare.gov security officer told Congress There have been two serious high-risk findings since the website's launch, including one on Monday of this week. Teresa Fryer, the Chief Information Security Officer for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, revealed the findings when she was interviewed Tuesday by the House Oversight Committee. She also told lawmakers that she explicitly recommended denial of the website's authority to operate, essentially shut it down, but was overruled by her superiors. She was worried about high risks and possible exposure to attacks. The administration responds to this story by saying, "We have no evidence that anything has been done to steal people's information or been attacked in any other way." But clearly, the dam is starting to burst on this issue, too.
These are not people who are saboteurs or skeptics of Obamacare or don't want, you know, these are people within the administration who are just looking at the technical situation and saying, look, this is not a secure site. We're putting people's data at risk. We're putting people at risk for identity theft. And they're getting overruled by the political superiors, presumably for political reasons. The idea that the administration couldn't say, look, we couldn't build a secure website on deadline, so we are pushing back the deadline until the site is secure. Nope. Push it through and hope for the best, which is a phenomenally irresponsible way of governing. You can only imagine the kinds of problems and consequences that will flow out from this. We saw another administration official who had serious similar concerns. You know, here we are. It's December 20th, and we're still seeing new revelations about the quality of the site that was unveiled on October 1st. Kind of frightening, considering how we're nearly 3 months back, and we're still learning new things about the security problems that they had. And as far as we can tell, still have. And the whole, oh, don't worry, everything's fine spin from the HHS just is not plausible in the slightest. So
maybe that's why Obama hasn't signed up yet.
The president's identity has been stolen. The president's credit cards. We used to set up a fake baby on Amazon.
Well, man, if you go to healthcare.gov or shop at Target or both, you're really in trouble. So
there you go. Yeah.
Wow.
I use my Target gift card to buy health insurance.
All right. On to martini number three now. And apparently the statute of limitations on blaming George W. Bush for the state of the economy has not run out yet. Because according to a new poll from The Washington Post and ABC News, 50% of Americans say Bush is still more responsible for the country's current economic problems than President Obama. Just 38% hold Obama more responsible. 7% assign equal blame. So, Jim, obviously Obama came in, dealt a pretty lousy hand in the wake of the financial crisis. But when you look at the stimulus not doing much, the problems with Obamacare and people holding off on hiring and all this stuff, it's amazing that the numbers are where they are.
Yeah, and a couple of thoughts jump out. The first is you look at that and you're like, ah, what is wrong with these people? Obama's been in office for 5 years. Stop blaming. You know, I understand that reaction on the right. I suppose if you're a really low information or low interest voter, and look, you know, at the end of Bush's presidency, really, you know, bad things happened to the economy. Housing bubble burst. The Wall Street crashed and tanked. The Great Recession began. Mass layoffs, wages, you know, which would not have been great before, really, you know, took it on the chin and have not, you know, and because nothing's recovered, there's, you know, probably a certain number of people who believe, well, it's Bush's fault. Like Bush caused the mess and, you know, Obama's trying stuff and it's just not working. And then somehow that means it's not his fault, our current economic condition. Clearly a very big bet on the part of the Romney campaign back in 2012 as well. The Americans will hold Obama responsible for the condition of the economy by November 2012. Will be able to make the case that he's failed and they should replace him immediately. Clearly didn't connect. Clearly that's what gets you, you know, just north of 47%. No irony intended in Romney's thing. You know, Americans, and it's frustrating. We can, you know, we've tried to make the argument that he tried the stimulus, that he's gotten his Dodd-Frank, that he's gotten his appointments at Treasury, and he's now soon going to have his own Fed chair. And he said all, you know, all the stuff that he's wanted to put into place. You wonder if the broad-based, you know, doubt in Obama's competence, his numbers in the economy have gone pretty low. It's very intriguing. I guess we can just continue that the Great Recession, in a lot of people's minds, will always be the fault of Bush. And, you know, look, as much as, you know, we gripe with good reason that the, you know, the general mood of the economy is pretty lousy, Americans are very pessimistic, still enormous amounts of economic anxiety out there, workforce participation is low. There was actually good numbers for the GDP that came out today. And obviously the stock market is going gangbusters. So it may be that here we are towards the end of 2013. The signs really are finally looking bright to something resembling a what we might consider a normal recovery. It just took 5 years to get here. And so maybe the argument now will be, look, let's look at what these Obama economic policies are doing. I mean, his whole campaign for 2014 is going to be about income inequality. Who's been in charge, Mr. President? You know, what do you think is the issue there? No, by the way, do you really think hiking the minimum wage and, you know, more tax hikes are really going to be what it takes to, never mind, you know, deal with income inequality, to greatly expand opportunity in this country?
Good point. The GDP did rise over 4% in the third quarter. That's definitely an encouraging sign.
By the way, I like to credit the sequester for that.
I think you probably should in a lot of ways. That's the end of a very exciting week on the Three Martini Lunch. Jim, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Have a wonderful weekend. And yes, we will be back on Monday for a brand new edition of the Three Martini Lunch.